Well, today is week two of our series, Lessons from a Toilet Overflow. And I woke up this morning and I saw it was snowing out. And the road for me was covered in snow. And I'm like, oh no, are we not going to have church? And it's funny, I was thinking about this. I remember I was at a speaking conference years ago. And the person who was presenting was giving you signs of how you know you're burnt out. And one of the ways in which you know you're burnt out is if you live somewhere where it snows, where there's a possibility of cancellation for church due to a snowstorm, that you get excited about that prospect. And I was extremely bummed this morning that we weren't going to have church, which I took as a really good sign because it means I'm not burnt out. But I thought about it, and I mean, there's been times before when sometimes, I mean, honestly, I'm like, oh, please, can there be snow? Because then I would be a week ahead in sermons, and it would be amazing. But the problem is, after the year that I had, or it's not a problem, but the good thing is, after the year I had, I just feel like I have so much to talk about that I said I can't get a week behind because this series has to be 4 weeks long, and I can't go into Lent. And I was starting to do all these mental gymnastics, but then luckily I went for a ride and realized, it's only my side street that they don't care about, and everything else is okay. So we can be here this morning, and we can talk about a toilet overflow together because that's exactly what you were all hoping to talk about as you were eating breakfast this morning. And I brought a picture for you today, not a physical picture, but an object. These shoes basically sum up my entire year last year. 9 months right here in these shoes. I bought these shoes maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. And I remember, I probably had like a 30-minute conversation with the owner of the store where I bought these shoes from, with him trying to sell me on these shoes and how they were amazing, because he had backpacked all throughout Europe. He wore these shoes. They were so comfortable. He went in the water. He threw them in the wash at night. They dried out by the next day. Buy these shoes because these are versatile shoes. And they've been great. I wear them all summer long. I do throw them in the wash. And these things have been great. So when everything started happening last year, I wanted the most comfortable shoes possible to wear, which now that I'm looking back on it, doesn't really make sense considering I was in a work zone for 9 months. And these are the shoes that I continue to wear. And so every single day I put these shoes on and I said, you know, I thought to myself, well, I might as well just get one pair of shoes dirty. Let's not ruin another pair of shoes. So I'll just wear these until the end of the 9 months. And I remember thinking this, like, this was a great idea. I'm going to wear these shoes, and it's going to be a sign of that I am just continuing to stay strong, like these shoes, and I'm going to wear these until the very bitter end. And then I'll get a pair of new shoes to kind of signify that a new season has dawned. And so I was resolute in this. Like, I would think this all the time. So I put these shoes on every single day, and it was a sign like, all right, I'm staying strong. I can do this. So these shoes were like a symbol for me. And I remember I would go into Home Depot, and I would be wearing like Nike athletic shorts, these shoes. I had a Nike athletic shirt on, and I had my man bun. And I'd be pushing one of these giant orange carts around with insulation, or I'd go pick up wood for the house. And I would get the oddest looks for people. And I would drop sheetrock on my feet. And these shoes, I bruised up my feet so badly last year, dropping sheetrock and wood, being in a construction zone, a work zone. But I stayed strong, and I said, I'm not going to ruin any other. I've had enough losses this year. I can't take another loss, even if it's simply a pair of shoes. One day, these shoes got really dirty, or maybe I was just like, well, okay, it's time to clean these things. And so I did what the man told me to do. I put them in the wash, or rather, Steph put them in the wash for me. Just being honest. And they went in the dryer. Now, she hadn't washed these shoes before. She was trying to help me out. I never had put these shoes in the dryer before. The shoes shrunk. They shrunk. So you can see that the bottoms are a little bit larger than the top. And it was even worse right after it had happened. And I thought, well, these shoes are flexible. They're not rigid shoes, so I can just wear these. It's fine. Who cares? Remember, I'm staying strong to the end with these things. I'm going to wear these till the final day when I get back in my house, and then I'll buy myself a new pair of shoes. The problem is when the tops of the shoes are smaller than the bottoms of the shoes, and you're trying to squeeze your feet into the shoes, it starts to hurt a little bit. But I was still picking up wood at Home Depot. I was still getting sheetrock. I was still walking through a work zone with mold and who knows what else I was walking on. I didn't want to ruin another pair of shoes. So for months, because this happened over the summer, and remember, we didn't get back in our house until December. So for months, I continued to squeeze my feet into these shoes. And the whole time, Steph's like, why don't you just buy yourself a new pair of shoes? Like, it's okay. Like, you can, like, we'll be all right. You can, I mean, that's like the least of our financial concerns, a pair of shoes. Just go buy yourself a new pair of shoes or wear one of the other pairs of shoes that you have. Okay, it makes sense now. But no. Well, I developed foot problems as a result of wearing these shoes. Like, major, I was hobbling around. Because my feet were constantly being squeezed into these. They're cracking on the bottom. I need to see a podiatrist. I really need to see, because my feet are still sore, and I don't even, like, we won't get into it. You know what happened? I held on to these for too long. I held on to these shoes for too long because I was stubborn. Maybe it was my pride. I don't know what it was. I had an idea. I had a dream, a goal in mind of what I was going to do, and nothing was going to get in my way of keeping these shoes until the end. I mean, you ever do that in life? You hold on to something? Like, it's long gone. That season has passed. You know, there's that fight that you got into, and no, I'm going to win this fight. I don't care what it costs me. I don't care what I have to say, what I have to do. And so we hold on to things. And what ends up happening is the longer we hold on to them, the more we try to squeeze our feet into a really, really small pair of shoes, the more problems it causes us down the road. There's this brilliant verse, one of my favorite verses in the Bible. It comes in Matthew chapter 10. Let me give you the name of this sermon. This name of this sermon is called Sometimes You Need to Take the Loss. I had to look back because I actually had about six different working titles going on this one, and I finally settled on this Friday afternoon. So the name of this sermon is Sometimes You Need to Take the Loss. Let's look at Matthew chapter 10. This is Jesus. He has gathered a group of disciples, people that are following his teaching. There's something that he's saying, and he's gathered 12 disciples who said, we want to follow you because there's something about your life. There's something that is just emanating from you, and we want to be around because we want to learn more. We want more of the life that you're offering. And so these 12 disciples, Jesus sent out with the following instructions. He's sending them out because he's trying to bring other people into this message, into this following. He's trying to bring healing, as we'll see, to the masses, to more people. And so what he does, instead of him just going out, he takes the 12 and he says, here are the instructions. Here's how you're going to spread the word, spread the message. Don't go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. So it starts with the Israelites. It starts with Jesus' people. And he says, here's where I want you to go. I want you to go to our people. I want you to go to them, and here's what I want you to do. Proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. And then I want you to heal the sick. I want you to raise the dead. Imagine that. You're like, yeah. How do we do that? You want me to raise the dead? All right, I can bring you back a burger, but raise the dead? I mean, come on. Now we're getting a little bit. But here's what Jesus, I mean, think about how much he believed in these 12. And this is early on. We're only in Matthew chapter 10. I mean, there's 20-something chapters, 28 chapters, I think, in the book of Matthew. We're only in 10, and already Jesus has got, like, pretty big expectations for the disciples, does he not? You're going to heal the sick, and you're going to raise the dead. And you're going to cleanse those who have leprosy. You're going to drive out demons. And then here, I love this line right here. Freely you have received, freely give. I love that. Put that in a bumper sticker. I think we need more bumper stickers like this. Rather than, like, this is who I'm voting for. Okay, like, that's great. But how about we just, like, freely give to others from that which we have received. Don't get any gold or silver or copper to take with you in your belts. Don't make any money. Don't take a bag for the journey or an extra shirt or sandals or a staff. For the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search there for some worthy person. I'd love instructions on that. I need a book on that. How do you find the worthy people in your town? You stay at their house. I love it. Hey, you seem worthy. I'm staying at your house tonight. Until you leave. And as you enter the home, give it your greeting. And there's kind of like a little secret symbol of how you do that, a little secret handshake, I think. Now, if the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. But if it's not, let your peace return to you. This is brilliant. I mean, there's so much to unpack here. We could just sit with this for an entire year. I bet there's so much here. But then here we go. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, leave that home or that town and shake the dust off your feet. Ooh. If people won't welcome you, they won't listen to that message. You know what? Just shake the dust off your feet and leave. Now, shake the dust off your feet. I'm guessing it's probably not a phrase that you've used this week. Probably not one of the top 10 phrases of 2021. Probably not even the past decade. If we go to the next slide, here's what it means. To shake off the dust means to depart in a hurry. It means to never visit again. So if the town or people won't welcome you, just get out of there. Leave. And so there's this picture of, remember, first century, people would have been wearing sandals. And as they're leaving in a hurry, whenever they're running, they're kicking the dust up because the roads wouldn't have been paved. All right, we're not talking about like 684, Sawmill, 287, nothing like that. The roads people have been using, they would have been dirt-covered roads. So as they're leaving, when they're going really, really fast, remember, depart in a hurry, the sand is kicking up. You ever ride your bike through a puddle? And the faster you go through the puddle, the more water gets kicked up on your back. And so if you're riding through a puddle, you kind of slow the bike down a little bit because you're like, oh, I don't want the back of my shirt to get wet. I don't want all this nasty puddle water to be in the back. So you go a little slow. This is not the picture we're giving. We're going to go as fast as you can through the puddle, kick up as much dirt, dust, water as you possibly can because it's time for you to leave and find another town to go to. Another way of another phrase that maybe we're more familiar with is the phrase, to wash my hands of this. I'm done. It signifies a cleansing. It signifies a leaving behind. If the people, here's the message, and I want you to do really, like I want you to do these amazing things. Here's what you're going to do. I'm telling you exactly what you're going to heal people. You're going to drive out demons. You're going to raise the dead. You're going to proclaim this grandiose message. And if people won't receive it, right? Remember, freely give from what you have freely been given. And if people don't receive it, get out of town. Go to the next slide. Now, here's, I guess, what the disciples most likely would have been thinking at this point. If they go into a town, I mean, think about it. Where are their expectations? Where are their hopes? Jesus, imagine you're the 12, and I think maybe we have 12 here, so maybe you're the 12, and here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to Dobbs Ferry. You're going to go to Rye. You're going to go to Elmsford. You're going to go to Scarsdale. You're going to go to all these towns. You're going to find the worthy person. You're going to do the secret handshake with them. You're going to stay in their home, and here's the deal. If they don't receive the message, the truth, your presence, I want you to leave. So in the beginning, where are your expectations? Like when Jesus is like, hey, I believe in you guys. Here's what you're going to do. They're like, up here, are they not? You're like, whoa, this guy believes in me? The things that we saw him do, he's telling us we're going to go and we don't actually even need him with us. I mean, Jesus isn't, he's not there holding their hands. He's like, you guys are going to do this on your own. You don't need training wheels. The power of the Spirit that you've seen reside in me, well, that same power rests within you as well. I mean, there's a certain level of excitement, is there not? And so imagine going to that first town, and you just give your all. You bring the heat. You're laying hands on people. You're praying for people. You have this message of how you've been transformed by this rabbi, by Jesus, how your life has changed completely. You want others to be brought into this. You have given the best of yourself. And that message, your presence, everything that you are doing, it just falls on deaf ears. People would rather just go sit and watch Netflix. And you're like, really, people? Really? So there's probably a little sense of defeat, is there not, at this point? I mean, we did every... Oh, we can go back to the first... I need my notes. we're going right here. So it didn't work out, right? And then think about this one. I mean, because we've all had a moment like this before where we had that expectation. Maybe it's not being sent out, but we had an expectation of how things were going to go. Or there's a way in which life is supposed to work. You ever experienced this in life? you were told a certain thing, or there's a certain narrative that our culture lives by, but it hasn't proven true for you. And there's this sense of disappointment, like, oh, no, it's not supposed to be that way. Here's how it's supposed to be. And so there's a sense of defeat and disappointment. We can go to the next slide. Now, I started asking myself, all right, well, why does Jesus tell the disciples to leave so quickly? I mean, it doesn't sound like Jesus. It doesn't sound like God. Doesn't God never give up? So why is it that Jesus is like, hey, if they're not receptive, get out of there as quickly as you possibly can? But wait a second. Shouldn't we just try harder? I mean, that's our culture, is it not? Something's not working out. We just dig our heels in and we try a little bit harder. We squeeze our feet into these shoes because no matter what, I'm going to wear this to the end. No matter what, I am going to accomplish the thing that I set out to do. I am going to realize this dream or this expectation that I have. I mean, what about this one? I mean, we're winners. We're winners. Growing up in America, we're told you are all winners. So never, ever give up. And now, I get it. There's a time and a place to not give up. Yes. We read a book with Reese, and it's about never giving up. And yes, there is a time and place for that. But sometimes you simply have to take the loss. Because if you don't, it's going to do more damage for you down the road. Like squeezing your feet into a pair of shoes that's just simply way too small, and that's causing major foot problems. So I started thinking about this. Why would Jesus tell the disciples to get out of town so quickly? Shouldn't he just tell them, just work a little harder, preach a little better, pray a little more? You know what? You're not having enough prayer meetings. You just need to have another prayer meeting, and then God's going to work everything out for you. If you just pray a little more, read your Bible a little more, go to church a little bit, give a little bit more, woo, now we're cooking. That's the secret sauce. That's how it's going to work. But no, notice Jesus doesn't say any of that. Instead, he says, get out of there. Go somewhere else. And so we did a survey, surveyed 100 people, top three answers on the board. And the first reason why I believe Jesus told, and again, there's probably plenty of reasons, but here's three that I came up with. First, to keep their hearts soft and open. Let's go to the next slide. 9 months, we were out of our home, and the temptation for me to sink into bitterness, feelings of being overwhelmed were right there every single day. Every single day, I was fighting that temptation to become bitter. Like, why do we have to go through this? I noted up there, SIU, Special Investigations Unit. Enough said. I got a call one day. We hired a public adjuster. He's like, hey, we got this email from your insurance company, and SIU is investigating you. I'm like, who's SIU? I mean, is that like Law and Order or S? What's that one? S what? SEI? SEI? SVU? I don't know that one, but I know that there's some letters or something. Yeah, SIU. So basically, they're investigating you because they want to do a fraud investigation into this insurance claim. I'm like, what do you mean a fraud? I'm a pastor. Come on, seriously. And it's so funny because in all the emails that the public adjuster sent back to the insurance company, he always had to put in there, this person is a pastor. No, not a pastor. This person is a man of the cloth. It's like just taking pastor up a few notches. Man of the cloth. I'm like, that sounds great. Yeah. And so I had to give a recorded statement. I remember they called me up and I had to talk on the phone and they asked me all these questions for an hour. I was so nervous going into this thing. I'm like, I'm going to say the wrong thing and they're going to think that I'm being fraudulent in some way just because I'm going to say the wrong thing. Or like, I remember. And then not only did I have to do a recorded statement, but then their investigation unit had to come out to the house to then do an entire walkthrough of the house as well. And I wanted to know who this person was that was coming. So I Googled him. I mean, like you do whenever you want to figure out who someone is, figure out their history. Well, he used to be a detective with the NYPD, which then, of course, made my heart beat a little bit faster. We'll go NYPD, oh. But, I mean, think about this. Like, no, these bills are legit. This is what's happening. And yet now I'm being claimed. Now people are thinking that I'm lying about this. I mean, I was starting to get a little bit bitter about that one. Or any time that I felt falsely led about something. I mean, sometimes someone would throw a bill out or say, hey, you need to do this. It's going to cost this much. I would start to get like, are they lying to me? Do they just want more money? Do they just want like an easy paycheck? I mean, especially you see the size of these bills that were getting thrown out as SIU determined, you start to question this a little bit. Is this really necessary? Do we really have to spend as much? What about this one? Poor work being done or being cheated. Once we were all done with the environmental part of the house, it was all cleaned up, we hired someone to start building back the basement. We hired this person, and within the first week of this company working in our house, I realized this isn't working. We got into a major fight over 1 foot. 1 foot. Basically, I said, this is where we want the footprint of the bathroom. And I came back the next day, and the bathroom was extended an extra foot. And I was like, no, this is terrible. This looks awful. This is not what we wanted. And then I get all, oh, no, this is how you want it. You're going to want it this big. You don't want it smaller. Major fight. Now, luckily, my brother-in-law was working at the house at the same time, and he was just witnessing. And I had another friend who was working there, too. They were witnessing the whole thing, and they pulled me aside after. I was like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. They're like, that's going to look terrible, because we were thinking about it, like, oh, should we keep that extra foot or should we not keep that extra foot? The guy just didn't want to do any other work. He was making it easy on himself. And then there was this thing, we wanted like an angle on the bathroom so that it would kind of soften the blow instead of a sharp 90-degree turn or corner that you saw. We didn't want our kids running into it, and it just looked ugly. The aesthetics of it were terrible. So we wanted a 45-degree angle, what he termed a neo angle. And he's telling us why you don't want a neo angle. So we were getting into all these fights about it until finally I'm like, no, listen, here's how I want it to be. He still refused to do it. Then he wanted to quick level the floor with cement. And he's like, oh, this thing's gonna dry in about 5 or 6 hours. Well, I came back later that day. There were massive puddles on the floor. I called him up. Oh, the reason why is because it's too cold out there. Okay. He's like, if we did it in the summer, it would have been dry already. Next day, massive puddle still. I call him up. I take pictures, send it to him. Oh, this is normal. Don't worry. It's just because there's too much cement there. Too much cement? Next day, come back, puddles on the floor. I call him. He gives me a third reason why. Finally, I'm like, all right. And then it's cracking. It looks awful. So, I come to the conclusion, I keep sending him all these pictures. We're going to get rid of him. We're just going to get rid of him. Okay. Then my brother-in-law, who's working at the house, he calls me one Friday afternoon. Because I'm like, I'm going to do this on Monday. Calls me one Friday. He's like, hey, this guy is shoveling with your snow shovel the cracked cement in your basement. And I start laughing. I'm like, yeah, right. No, he's not. Like, no one would do that. He's like, no, I'm serious. So I race down there. Sure enough, he's ruining my snow shovels by chipping up this cracked cement in my basement. And then at that point, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to fire him right now. And I told my brother-in-law, can you please stay there a few minutes? Because I don't know what this guy's going to do. The guy might be unhinged. I don't know what's going to happen. And so I'm like, can you please stay there? Because I don't want to get into a fight. And the whole time I'm going there, I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do if he starts swinging? And honestly, I was like, you know what? I'm faster than him. And I told Steph this afterwards, that the whole way down to my house, I was thinking, the whole way back to the house, I was thinking, okay, what am I going to do if he starts fighting? And then she's like, what would you have done with Adam? Like my brother-in-law, you would have just left him and then you would have ran? And I was like, well, he used to wrestle. He's fine. And then after this, so after we fired him and said it's just not working out, that Monday we got into a major fight over the cost of the bills and how much we felt he owed us. And we were deciding, are we gonna sue him? Are we going to have to go through small claims court? And then he offered something. We still didn't feel it was right. And it was just this process, and the whole time we just felt like we were being royally screwed over. And this was at the end of these 9 months. So you can think about all the weight, the bitterness and disappointment that had been building up over the first 7 or 8 months. Then to get to this at the end of it, I mean, I just, I mean, I I wanted to go sue him. I wanted to go to small claims court just because, just for the justice of it all, because I was tired of being screwed over. We were tired of having to deal with all of this. And then, I mean, there's just so many things. And the truth is, I mean, all throughout this entire process, the temptation to become bitter and angry and resentful and unforgiving and wanting to sue people or start swinging fists, I mean, it was just building up the entire time. I remember, we can go to the next slide. I remember when I was in seminary, there was a professor, and he would always say this: every single situation that you encounter in life, it's an opportunity to become bitter or better. And I had that running through the back of my mind the entire time. And the question really was for me, what kind of a person do I want to become? It's very, very tempting. It's like when you go to the grocery store and you're hungry and you just want to throw everything in your cart. It's really, really tempting to sink into bitterness, resentfulness, unforgiveness. I'm going to dig my heels in. I'm going to squeeze my feet into these shoes because I'm right. It's our pride that gets in the way at times. We don't want to be seen as losers, as weak. We're winners. We want to win this. We, for the justice of it, every single situation, we can become bitter or we can become better. It's a question of what kind of people do we want to become in life? And there were days where I was like, I just want to be a better person, and it's okay. I don't care anymore. And it's funny, because when you're a pastor and you got to get up to speak every single week, in the back of your mind, you're like, how can I be a pastor if I'm harboring all this bitterness? And I'm like, I don't care. I'm not going to be a pastor anymore. I got pretty good at managing a house. I'll be a general contractor. Then you can be bitter. Who cares? But yet, you know, after a couple of days of just kind of sinking into that place, I'd wake up, I'm like, no, that's not who I want to be. That's not who. So that betterness or becoming a compassionate person, not sinking into those feelings, it started winning out. But man, that temptation, it is real, especially when you're going through it. And there'd be days, weeks, where I was like, I just don't care anymore. This is who I'm going to become, and it's fine. I deserve it. I deserve it. Look at what had happened to us. We deserve to sink into this. It's funny, I realized last week I went 40 minutes, and when I was putting the sermon together for last week, I was like, oh, do I want this part in there or not? And I was like, let's put it in. But I kind of had a feeling last week, don't put it in. So I put it in, I went longer, and then after the sermon last week, I was like, oh, I should have left that part out. It would have been a little tighter. So I'm going to just move on the fly here, and I'm going to take a part out. Is that okay? Do you want to take a part out? How are we doing? What time is it? I kind of like this quote. Can I use a quote? I'm going to use a quote. All right, I decided. I'm going to use a quote. You know what? I'm having more fun this year than I had ever last year, and it is great. I love it. So here's the truth. In order to keep your heart open and your heart soft rather than closed, it comes down to acceptance of the situations in life that come our way. And acceptance doesn't mean you just simply become a doormat. It doesn't mean you're like, all right, this is what it is. All right. No. It just means acceptance of this is reality, and I now need to deal with reality. It's accepting of this is what's happening right now, and I'm going to work my way through this. I'm going to become a better person through this rather than a bitter person. And there's this quote from a book called The Five Invitations, and you can try to pronounce Frank's last name. But I think this quote is brilliant. Acceptance is not resignation. It's an opening to possibility. And openness is the basis for a skillful response. Notice that word response, not reactive. We're trained to react. We're reactive people. It's like that knee-jerk reaction. Someone says something and immediately you have that, like, crank it up to 11, 12 on the dial response, and you're like, whoa, where'd that come from? We're typically reactive people. So how do we simply respond to a situation? So in spite of what we've been led to believe, which is that destiny rests in our own hands, we often have little control over the external circumstances of our lives. However, we have a great deal of choice about how we relate to and learn from the cards that life deals us. So for me, it's always last year, the question that kept coming back is, and that's why this sermon series right now is, well, what's this situation teaching me? What am I learning right now? What am I learning about life, about myself? How can I become a bitter? Where'd that come from? Yeah, how can I become a better person through this situation? How can I keep my heart soft and open instead of closing myself off to all the goodness? Because here's the truth. We can go one more slide. Maybe I didn't put it. Maybe it's somewhere else. But the truth is the more closed off our heart is, we think sometimes it's just like we live in a silo and it's one situation. But the more closed off our heart is to one thing, the more closed off we then become to the rest of the things, the goodness that's coming our way. The more we close our fists, the less we're able to actually receive. What you have freely received, freely give. Now, here's another reason why I said why I think Jesus said to leave, get out of there, is so that we can live in the present. There's a word, we can go to the next slide, resentment, that has been on my mind now for a couple of weeks. I came across this idea in a podcast a few weeks ago, and I just couldn't shake. This was so profound, so mind-blowing. I just haven't been able to shake this idea. Resentment comes from the Webster's definition, bitter indignation at having been treated unfairly. You ever experienced this before? You ever feel like you've been treated unfairly? And I put in there, sometimes it's by another person. Sometimes we feel like we've been treated unfairly by an organization, by an institution, like a church. Other times we feel like we've gotten the short end of the stick from God. So resentment is whenever there's this bitter indignation at having been treated unfairly by whoever or whatever it happens to be. Now, resentment comes from the French word resentir. It comes from two words, re, which means again, or back, like replay, to play again and again. And then the word sentir, which means to feel. So resentment means to feel again and again and again. Now that's really interesting. It means to feel again and again the sense of being treated unfairly. So whenever we hold on to resentment, maybe there's something that had happened 5 years ago, something that happened 10 years ago, what we're really doing is we're replaying that feeling, or we're having that same feeling that we had initially again and again. It's like we're caught in a loop. And we constantly are feeling this sense that we have been treated unfairly. Someone did something wrong to us. And so we're not actually able to live in the present moment because we're stuck somewhere in the past. There's this cycle, this loop that we keep experiencing, and it doesn't just stay here. We actually physically feel. That's why when you get angry, you ever notice, like, you have a certain somatic bodily response. Doesn't just stay up here, you start to tense up a little bit. Your breathing becomes a little bit more shallow. You're remembering how it was when you initially felt the sense of being treated unfairly. That's why you're ever in an argument with someone, you're ever in a fight with someone, and I know none of us have ever done this before, but everyone like shaking their head like, no, not me. Or you're shaking your head like, yeah. and you're having a fight, and it's about this, like, why didn't you put gas in the car? But it's not really about putting gas in the car. It's really about a fight that you had 2 weeks ago or 6 months ago or 5 years ago. Because, again, resentment, we're on this loop. There's certain trigger points that bring it back up again and again and again. And so Jesus is like, hey, don't let resentment build up. Don't let the dust accumulate and harden and build up on your sandals. Don't let the dust get caked into your shoes, but rather shake all of that off. Deal with it now. Own and acknowledge the disappointment, the sense of being treated unfairly. Own it, voice it, express it, have a good cry about it. Go shake your fist at the heavens, whatever, go for a jog, go for a run, journal about it, go grab someone and talk, whatever you have to do, but don't let the dust build up, because the more dust that accumulates on the bottom of your sandals, the bottom of your shoes, the less you're going to actually be able to be present to this moment and to that which is before you. Which then leads to my third reason why I think Jesus said to shake the dust off your feet and to leave is so that they had energy to invest in their life. That's what you all want. You know, whenever there's a situation, sometimes you have to take the loss. Sometimes there is time. Sometimes you do have to simply move on. You don't try to win that fight. As much as you want to win that fight, and you, ooh, if I were to say this, well, I get the upper hand. Sometimes you just simply got to let it go and say, I'm going to lose that fight, and it's okay. You know what? We got cheated out of some money. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I could really dig my heels in, fight about it, but how much energy is that going to take up? Maybe I just got to let that go. We lost some money. Okay. But let's not let that build up. And you can, there's something, life isn't always, as much as we're told, life is not always up and to the right. But unfortunately, that's kind of the expectation that we've been given. It's always going to go up this way. And if you're not going up and to the right, if you're staying stagnant, well, then there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with your life. No, it's just the reality of how life works. And there's sometimes you're going to lose. And what I discovered last year is the quicker I can accept that, the quicker I can move on and toss the shoes and consider them a loss, the more I can just set those to the side, well, the softer your heart will be, the less problems it's going to cause you further down the line. Because now I have to spend time and money going to a podiatrist because I was squeezing my feet into these shoes. What do we got? Yeah, I think we covered most of that. I think we're good. Sometimes you just got to take the... So we all have some dirt, and we got to get to the dirt, of course. I know you're wondering, keeping you in suspense, Adrian, for the entire time. I realize I haven't used a prop in a while, and I thought, ooh, if I can put this up here, we're going to create some suspense for this morning. I came in lugging a 50-pound bag of dirt, and Ted was like, what's in the bag? You'll see. So we all have some dirt. And here's the truth about all of us. There's been times when we've been hesitant to shake the dust or the dirt off of our feet. There's been times when we have refused to take the loss. And so there's dirt that's hardened. Yes, on the bottoms of our shoes, but there's dirt that's hardened on our hearts. It's been building up, and it's taken us away from the life that's before you. It's moved you in a direction that, truthfully, you just don't want to move in that direction. It's taking you away from the person that you truly want to be. It's robbing your joy, your contentment, the possibility, the hope for today and tomorrow. And so as Jesus told the disciples, hey, you know what? There's times that you just got to take the loss. There's times that you did everything you possibly could. You invested. You gave your heart. You did the best you could. And there's simply times that you have to move on. There's times that you got to just say, okay, lost that one. But I want to be able to give my best to that which comes next. So as we leave here this morning, I want you all to take this dirt with you. And there's two questions I have for us. Where has the dust accumulated and hardened in your life? Where's the dust been building up? That bitterness, that resentment, that loop that you keep feeling again and again. And then what dust have you been holding on to? So I want to invite you this week, take this dust, ask yourself these two questions, and whatever you need to do with this dirt, maybe you need to just take it out of the cup, and as you are answering these questions, you just need to throw it away. You just need to fling it as far as you can. Maybe you need to actually physically put your shoes in this dirt, or maybe you need to get more dirt on your shoes, and you need to go for a jog, and you got to just let all that dirt and that dust just slowly go away. You got to kick it up. You got to leave it. Or maybe you need to cake this onto the bottom of your shoes. You got to get a toothbrush or a stick, and you got to just wash those shoes, as symbolizing a cleansing. washing your hands of anything that is hardened on your heart, that's taking you away from having a heart that is open and soft and able to receive the goodness that is yours this morning. Because the truth is, there's plenty of goodness. But sometimes the dust or the dirt doesn't allow us to see that goodness that's already right there in front of us. So God, today, God, I know how easy it can be for us to sink into times of bitterness. God, feelings of resentment, a feeling like we were owed something that we didn't receive. God, it can be easy to allow dust to harden and to accumulate on our hearts. So God, as Jesus had invited the disciples, instructed the disciples to leave town, God, to shake the dust off of their feet in situations where they weren't received. God, I pray that we would be able to do the same. God, give us the wisdom to know when we simply need to take a loss. And just say, if I were to continue this path, it would just bring me down a road that is not the best for me, for my soul, for the life that you desire for us to have. God, we want to be people with hearts that are soft and open. So I pray that your Spirit would come and would remove any of the dust that is hardened upon the soles of our feet. God, I ask that we would take the time this week with those two questions. And as we sit with those questions, God, as we sit with this dust, I pray that we would experience a healing, a filling. God, that our hearts would become softer than they might even be at this moment. May we be people who are able to live in the present moment, with our hands wide open, ready to receive the goodness that is ours today. So may we not miss any of that goodness. And if there's anything that's getting in our way of receiving that, God, I just ask that you would reveal it and give us the strength to own and then to leave that behind. We pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.